Well, good morning. Good morning to everybody. Happy Tuesday, April 1st. If you partake, happy April Fool's Day, I guess. But this is the Bitcoin Veterans episode 149. I am your host, Coleman, and I am joined by co-host Bob Van Kirk. Bob, thank you so much for taking over yesterday and keeping the show going. I much appreciate that. How was your afternoon evening yesterday?
Wonderful, Coleman. And yeah, you make it look easy, all the work you do. So we appreciate you. And it's always a little clunky when I take over, but I think we got the show off and looking forward to talking again today.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't able to really listen to anything that you guys had talked about yesterday, so I do apologize. But I, again, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the background on this space. So for anybody out there, if you enjoy this content, if you enjoy listening to this every weekday, just to help us out, just go ahead and retweet the link. That's really all we ask. Just get more engagement involved. It means a lot to us. It helps our listeners. Or our listeners' growth. But it's just, again, we have really high content here, high signal, not a lot of noise. We try and stick to the facts. Even though it is April Fool's Day, we will not be partaking in spewing false lies and jokes. I think I've gotten to a point in my life where I'm just a little too old for that. So we'll go ahead and pass. But I do want to go ahead and kind of just start rolling right into today's space. We do have a special guest that is joining us today. We have Miss Sue Ennis joining us from Hut 8. Good morning, ma'am. How are you doing?
Good morning. Super happy to be here. Really exciting time for Hut. We just wrapped our analyst and investor call with the Trump team. And yeah, happy to get into it for a couple of minutes here before our next call.
Yeah, so I'd like to, yeah, just dive right into it. What can you tell us about it? From what I could gather, they have a 20% stake in Hut 8.
Yeah, so I think the way to think about it is Hut has three different core business lines, but our whole raison d'etre is that we want to innovate and build infrastructure at the intersection of power and compute. And so part of our compute layer, though, was we've got these GPUs that we do for GPU as a service in the AI space, and then we obviously also have our ASIC Bitcoin mining business. Now, in order for us to continue to build energy infrastructure and innovate, one of the things we know for the long term is that we have to reduce our cost of capital. And that was a very difficult thing to do when you had a very high CapEx, high volatile business like Bitcoin, like the ASIC Bitcoin mining business. And so carving out that business the same way that we carve out our AI compute business was always on our roadmaps. And then Mike Ho, our Chief Strategy Officer, he knew the World Liberty guys because Mike's been in the Bitcoin space since like 2014. And so over the series of the past few months, you know, there was a lot of conversations that happened. Obviously, the Trump family has been, you know, dipping into the digital asset space, and conversations came to fruition that they also wanted to get into the actual infrastructure side and, you know, literally start mining and getting into Bitcoin, acquiring Bitcoin at cost. And so it made a lot of sense. It was a win-win for both parties. We effectively got to carve out our high volatility business, implement our roadmap of having lower cost of capital financing options for our future growth, and then ADC, which is the company that we merged with for American Bitcoin, was able to execute on their ambitions of actually getting into the actual production side of Bitcoin. So it's a win-win for both parties. Hut owns 80% of this carve-out. This isn't us having given the Trumps 20% of Hut's business. This is a new business that has its own P&L, its own CEO, its own board, and Hut owns 80% of that business. So we are insanely excited. The transcript for those of you who missed the call this morning will be available. I hope tomorrow morning, for you guys to re-listen to. But we are insanely excited to be partnering with Eric on this, and we are absolutely going to win and be America's largest Bitcoin miner. So yeah.
Well, that's amazing, Sue. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that you're able to get that deal worked out. if you can, what states do you plan on kind of expanding in first, or can you kind of elaborate in kind of what's the next 6 to 12 months look like?
Yeah, so we announced a roadmap to 55 exahash. The initial areas where we'll be mining are in Texas. And then we've also got a site in New York State, and then there's actually another site in Canada as well. And obviously that's a legacy Hut 8 site. And again, these sites are still going to be owned and managed by Hut 8. It's just the machines that American Bitcoin actually owns. And again, Hut was going to be managing these sites. We're going to be running these sites. So Hut 8 ParentCo is going to get steady Eddy fiat-based revenue from the machines that American Bitcoin owns. So yeah, that's the initial location is Texas, New York State, and then Alberta in Canada, which is like the North Dakota of Canada. And then, you know, we haven't disclosed where our additional roadmap is going to be, but obviously, you know, the whole point of this business is bringing revenues into the U.S., American Bitcoin, American production, and so we'll definitely keep you guys posted on that.
So someone that's directly involved with this administration and seeing kind of the change from the previous one, which we can all agree on, that wasn't very pro Bitcoin, pro industry. How much better is this roadmap that we're currently going on with the Trump administration going to be for your business?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, I think outside of the Trumps, just in general, we've got a very pro crypto cabinet that's being assembled. So to Scott Bessent's, it looks like stablecoin laws are going to be passed. So it in general, it's just we really do think it's a different era for this industry. And again, we're thrilled to be partnering on some level with the administration in terms of continuing to move forward America's dominance in this industry. So it's pretty great on all.
Are you still talking, Sue? I can't hear anything.
No, sorry. I am in a choppy Wi-Fi area, so I may be cutting in and out, but no, that's it.
Oh, perfect. I'm going to throw it over to Bob or Texas if you guys have any questions for Sue. I'm going to take that as a no. I'm not hearing either of you talk right now.
You know what? I actually do have to pop off anyways. Really great to meet you guys, though. And super pumped to have you guys, you know, in our corner, and happy to chat anytime. Thanks so much, y'all.
Hey, thank you so much, Sue, for taking time out of your morning. And I wish you all the best of luck, and I hope you're very successful with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. Good day.
Hey, Coleman. Coleman, I'm just going to do a mic check. Can you hear me? I was having a little bit of trouble there.
I can hear you loud and clear, sir.
You blew it.
You had one
chance. Yet again. Yet again.
Yeah, that's the story of my life. I always need second chances. Never seem to get it done the first time. Hence why I postponed entering into the Bitcoin space. You know, everyone, I'm sure everyone has that same story though. If I could go back in time, that's the first thing I do is I just slap myself as hard as I could back in 2013. It looks like, I'm seeing on the back channels, hey, Montani, if you're able to, are you able to come up here and talk a little bit about that? I don't think I'll have a chance to dig into it. So if you are familiar with it, just go ahead and request to speak and we'll dive into that. But before we kind of get into that, Bob, let's go back and rewind into, yesterday's show a little bit where, BlackRock came out with their investor report and Larry Fink kind of insinuated that Bitcoin could, and I want to make sure I stress, could replace the U.S. dollar as the reserve, kind of backing the reserve currency. Do you want to dive into that a little bit right now?
Yes. Sorry about that. So, you know, we covered a little bit yesterday, and Mining Goblin had shared it with us and then came up and talked a little bit. I had a chance to read the letter. It's interesting how Larry Fink danced around some things. I think, you know, one of the things you brought up, Coleman, is true. He did say that And I think what a lot of people would pull out of it is that Bitcoin does have the potential to unseat the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And so I think that that is not imminent, personally. And I don't think he was really sounding the alarm, so much as just maybe paying homage to it because, you know, BlackRock did, launch their ETFs last year. It's been wildly successful and, it's becoming more and more of a core of their business. What I wanted to maybe highlight is just from the perspective of the changing landscape that he talked about with banking. And he didn't specifically mention community banks, but that's kind of my bailiwick. I was a community banker for 21 years and now consult with banks. One of the things that people might find interesting is he talks about private markets. So for those that didn't get a chance to read it, he talks about private markets and touches on tokenized private credit. And so this really stuck out to me along with the stablecoin mentions because really this is now just an apparent huge threat to the way commercial banks work. And sorry for the beeps going on in the back channels here. I can mute that maybe. But what I wanted to really focus in on is, and he kind of says this in his letter, if you kind of read between the lines, he talks about tokenizing private debt. And so if you think about it, we could live in a world where, you know, community banks no longer provide credit to small businesses or private businesses. And what I think could happen is we'll have deposit runoff of traditional financial institutions because if you look at the lending landscape, a lot of these small businesses rely upon small banks to provide them with credit. But there's a lot of friction there. They have to jump through a lot of hoops and, you know, there's also a lot of competition. So banks have to be willing to lend. As BlackRock and others develop this private markets built on, basically fractional ownership of debt, with, you know, tokenization, people can, more easily just pull money out of the financial system, the traditional financial system, and get better returns with less risk in these private markets that are tokenized. And so all this being said, I know it's kind of a lot of words here, but what I want to kind of lay out here is that he's kind of pointing something out that is interesting because like to date, you know, everything's been, geared towards, accredited investors. So you have to have large pools of capital, in order to invest in these private debt. And if they tokenize everything and you can just own a very small, fraction of tokenized debt, you're going to be getting a better return. It's going to be far more liquid. So think of like any cryptocurrency, you know, if you can just kind of move in and out of it very quickly, because there's interest there. I think this could really change things. Now, I don't think it's like going to happen tomorrow, but I think it's something we should watch. I mean, when the world's largest asset allocator starts talking and putting these pieces all together for us, I think it'll be interesting from like the choices that you have to make in the future. Like maybe we're all Bitcoin only, but I think there is a place for people who want to invest in the company up the street. Not maybe like an equity position, but because it's private, but they may want to get a better return by essentially cutting out the middleman. You won't have banks in the middle taking your deposit and then lending it out at a higher rate. Leaving you with a small return. And so I think, you know, it's kind of a, maybe a long-winded intro to this topic, but I wanted to highlight it for everybody because I do think, there's a trend here and a shift, and it's going to be important for people to understand it, especially as you look at the risk of holding deposits at some of these, smaller financial institutions. If they don't innovate and provide you with better returns, it maybe you don't do anything about it, but your, a lot of the people who have their deposits at these financial institutions will be pulling them out, which will make that bank unstable. And thus, I think, part of the case for Bitcoin. So I'll stop there.
No, that was a great explanation. So I do thank you, Bob, for going into it. We got a couple hands up. So I got DJ Satoshi first and then Texas Toast. Go ahead, DJ.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for hosting space as you always do. Every space, I enjoy listening to you guys, all the value you guys provide. Thank you for that. But it's funny that Bob just mentioned, you know, it might not happen tomorrow, but actually I believe it happened yesterday. And this is a protocol that's being built right now on Bitcoin. It's called BitCredit. So funny enough to what you're saying, this is very true. Credit will exist. It will always exist. It has to exist in order for businesses to be able to operate, because most businesses work on a net 30 or net 90 or whatever type of, you know, terms. So you're totally right that this is a very important point, for Bitcoin to have credit. So if you guys want to check it out, it's called BitCredit. This is a protocol. It's a open source protocol. So the same as Bitcoin is open source, the same as Nostr is open source. Credit is now open source and decentralized. So it's very interesting what we're seeing happening with technology like Bitcoin and Nostr and AI. So, I would definitely welcome anyone who's interested to learn more about it. It's being done on Cashew Mints. So it's like eCash. So basically anyone who wants to invest in a company or lend to a company can now go ahead and do that. They don't need to be a bank. So it's going to be much more decentralized.
Do you have a link that we can throw up in the nest, DJ, about BitCredit?
It looks like it's bit.cr. If people want to check it out.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I'll check that out. So they just started rolling this out, so it looks like it's probably going to take a while. Do you have any other information that you can share with us, kind of the details?
I'm still learning about it. I actually learned about it through Twitter, through a guy named Hubertus. I forget his last name, but he is the founder of it. He's kind of like the inventor of it. So he has a whole team that are working on this. You know, he is a Bitcoiner. He's an Austrian economist, from my understanding. Very smart guy. He talks a lot about how, you know, because right now we have a fractional reserve banking system, we have a failed credit system, right? Because basically credit is just created out of thin air. But thanks to Bitcoin, Bitcoin is going to be the underlying asset of all this credit. So, it's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, to be honest. Like, I'm still learning a lot about it. I'm still trying to learn, like, about like Mises and, you know, the theory of money and credit, and trying to better understand all this. It's like a whole another rabbit hole to go down. So I don't have much more information other than I would suggest he did a talk at in El Salvador, I believe. So I'll post up that talk that he did talking about BitCredit and how it works and why it's so important. So I think a good place to start.
Texas Toast, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I'm going to preface this with, I'm kind of retarded, but I kind of have a pessimistic view of the tokenization. In some aspects, it's like, I think of it as being good to be able to invest in, you know, maybe a mom and pop shop or just stuffing your community a little easier. But on the bigger scale, I think kind of what you're talking about, it's like they need the liquidity, the asset holders of the world. You know, most of these major industries and companies are owned by a few other major industries and companies and people. And I kind of see it as a, you know, as Bitcoiners, we all kind of see these things as having a huge monetary value. People have used them to save their money. And I think some of these guys understand this and they need the liquidity. It's almost like, to me, I see it as a way for them to get out of these companies and industry, or these, you know, all their money's wrapped up in these companies and they consider them overvalued. So I kind of see it as like a way to get for them to get out, and kind of dump on retail as they kind of FOMO into these, once tokenization happens and they can start sprinkling in. These guys are going to be selling, is what I kind of think, and buying Bitcoin, as their monetization tool, as their money. Because we realize now that Bitcoin's here and that's the real money. These companies aren't the real money. And everybody wants to have more, but it's like, how do you get out of these things in a way that's not going to, you know, crash everything? I think this is kind of one of the ways that, that they're going to do that. So just my random thoughts.
Yeah. No, I think it's, brings up some really good points and some things we can, talk a little bit more about. One of the things that, you made me think of is, you know, just for the listener, banks, their primary job is to assess the risk of the borrower. And so, what you're doing is, moving that out of all of these decentralized community banks' hands and into, you know, larger financial institutions like BlackRock, who can help their clients assess the risk, maybe in a more automated way, to open up these markets. And, you know, Larry Fink's argument in this whole thing is that there's essentially $25 trillion in idle funds just sitting at banks. It's estimated that maybe 6 to 7 trillion of that is at community banks and the rest is at the larger financial institutions. Those funds are under pressure because, whatever the true inflation rate is, if you're not receiving a return, you're getting a net loss in purchasing power. So those sleepy deposits, he's saying, are going to wake up and now have the ability to move into these private markets to purchase private debt, where BlackRock and maybe some of the other larger financial institutions can help assess the risk of the borrower on the other side. And obviously, as the middleman, take the cut, albeit with smaller margins than a community bank. But, you know, his argument in his letter is that this democratizes private debt because, people, you know, on average haven't had access to these markets because they're largely illiquid, right? Like if you lend money to a small business, they're using that to invest in their company. And presumably spending it, right? For equipment, more employees, so on and so forth, maybe inventory. And so the issue is, if you want your money back, if you don't have deep pockets, you're not going to be able to withstand the hit, that it'll take. And you know, most people aren't sophisticated enough to understand the risk and, have their money sit out there or this value, sit out there for long periods of time while a business tries to make more money, with it. And so that's why banks are there. But I do think, like, if you put this, you know, on, other rails like Bitcoin, you're going to have people with the ability to buy very small fractions of this, tokenized debt while the bank is still helping assess the risk. And you're going to get better returns, than you would sitting in the bank. So from like my standpoint, I look at it as, man, maybe there's opportunity for, you know, the small guy, which is great. But the reality is, like, the smaller banks are just not going to be able to compete. Like they're going to go, the way of the dinosaur. And so my comments earlier about this not being like an imminent threat, really is, I mean, like, banks aren't going away today or tomorrow, but in a few years, I can see where this is very easily consolidated to the few large institutions who understand what Larry Fink is talking about.
I think you're right with that, Bob. And if I was going to speculate a little bit further, I think that's why they're trying to get through this stablecoin bill act here in the United States. And I do think it'll be good for the industry as a whole, Bitcoin included. But I think this is just another guise of a CBDC if they're able to implement all these controls on top of it. And I think that's why they're pushing this through versus what we're seeing and our counterparts over in Europe, where they're pushing the CBDCs, which are supposed to go into effect, I believe, in October of this year. So by seeing how this game is going to play out, which we can see as well, that the way the traditional finance system is set up today is not going to be the same in 4 or 5 years. And so that once they start implementing these little measures, they'll be able to still kind of control things. And so I do think this is very important, why we have to plant our flag in the ground and say, this is why we Bitcoin. Because there will be a time, regardless if it's a stablecoin act or a CBDC, where you will be limited on what you can and can't do with that token. And so I think you will see stuff like this kind of just drive the peer-to-peer Bitcoin adoption, just simply because there is no one that's going to be able to control your money. So that's kind of my thoughts on this.
Yeah, just of note, I know we said we aren't going to do too much for April Fools. So rather than playing a joke on everybody, I thought it'd be funny to just share one of the things I saw come across this morning on my X feed, which was, it said the ECB, the European Central Bank, or it was EU lawmakers, were trying to make it so that it's illegal for people to use the Bitcoin network other than standard banking hours, 8 to 4. And obviously with it being April Fool's Day, I had to laugh at that. And it did cause me, though, to go make sure that it was actually, there was like no sources, and I couldn't find any. So obviously it's April Fool's, but I thought that was pretty funny because, as most of you know, on the space, you're not going to be able to prohibit people from using Bitcoin, regardless of the hour of the day. So good stuff there.
Yeah, I would just disregard any.
But believable.
It is believable. It's pretty wild out there. I don't know if you covered it in yesterday's space, but the dip covered it yesterday about the French, prime minister or president, that Mir Le Pen, I think. I better just kind of pull it up really quick before I start spouting out false information. Apologize about that. But she's been banned from running for office for 5 years due to having some of her team work on personal finance matters instead of working on the party finance. So Marie Le Pen is banned for running for office for 5 years, which is kind of interesting because she was the leading party candidate against Macron. So I think you saw this happen in the United States. They tried everything they could to prevent Donald Trump from running. They went as far as trying to take his life. You're seeing this go on in Romania right now. You're seeing this go on in Brazil. It's pretty crazy of what's going on right now. And so this is why, again, like Texas was saying, yeah, it's an April Fool's joke, but you know, I could see, because it's just so dystopian out there, I can see why they would really try and limit the transaction of Bitcoin. So
it's yeah, crazy. These existing leaders do see the threat. Most everybody follows, you know, these elections, and you can see just like by way of who's been elected lately, and then also the polls, that people are definitely shifting the other way. And so, you know, it's very sad but interesting to see these people put their political opponents in prison and ban them from running when they're clearly the most popular choice for the people who are trying to get away from the existing regimes.
And I think this is a perfect segue to go into the next topic I wanted to cover. And even though we're Bitcoin only, it still takes time. We still need to discuss what's going on in the gold market. For those of you who are unaware, gold has just been on an absolute tear for the last 6-7 months. Currently right now, it's sitting at about $3,155 per ounce. And I know, you know, gold is boomer technology. It's going to be obsolete. Yeah, that's for us because we know how the game's going to end. But for the vast majority of people, they still do not understand the significance of what Bitcoin will be playing. So they still rely on the thing that they consider a neutral reserve asset, which is gold. And I think that's why we're seeing the price of gold go so high. It's just simply because there's so much chaos going on in the world. With the elections taking place, the uncertainty in the Middle East. And I think the bigger elephant in the room is the fact that there's so much debt in the global economy, and with, especially in the United States, with interest rates being so high, and they are doing everything they can to try and bring them down. People just realize that there's going to be a hard reset coming up. And so I really don't know what's going to happen in the markets. But I try and follow people that are smarter than me. And Larry Lepard is a good follow for this. He used to be really big into gold and silver, and he found Bitcoin and just followed the natural transition. But he always states that Bitcoin follows gold's price by about a 5 to 6 month lag. So with gold ripping the way that it has been, you can expect the Bitcoin price to follow here in the next couple of months.
Coleman, let me share with you why I believe gold is nearing its top. There are reports of many lines at Costco for people buying gold at Costco. And so that should tell you everything. Like when retail is in heavy and you have people panic buying it, I think this is the top. There's going to be people getting out here, much smarter people who have owned it for much longer. So that's my opinion. I think we're headed towards an eventual top probably pretty soon. When you go to Costco on a Sunday morning and you see lines of, you know, 20 or more people waiting to buy gold, then that should tell you something. Bitcoin for precedence. What's up, man?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I have to disagree with you there, on the, gold thing, cause you have to look at gold as the second best money now that Bitcoin has been discovered. And the dollar was gold. When you reach back into history, I mean, you couldn't buy it. It was banned for sale until like 64, which is like 13 years before I was born. So now that you have people lining up to buy it at Costco, and it's always sold out at my Costco, and all I look at is the silver, because silver is 90-1 Bitcoin right now, and that's the third best money. So you have a hierarchy of money, like just like in prison, when you have soups or stamps, you have certain things that are better at holding their value, like tuna goes bad after what, 2 years or something. But gold, silver, that's second and third place you're looking at. Fiat is just a psyop. The fiat money that all these people in government are holding up like balls in the air, they're going to keep holding it up as an obfuscation to real money as long as they can. So just like Bitcoin has no top in fiat lens, or the paradigm of seeing the world through fiat dollar, US dollar, gold and silver have no top, because as they debase, it's just going to increase the price. If they don't get those, you know, those paper gold and paper silver, like they've been manipulating the price for so long, I think those days are numbered.
I would have to agree with Bitcoin precedence on this, Bob. I don't think that we're going to be at a local top anytime soon with the gold market. Silver, I doubt you get over $36 an ounce. I'm sorry, but silver is used in so much technology, and it is used in every single missile that the United States use in its defense. There's no way that they can let silver go to its natural price of a couple hundred dollars an ounce. It would just make war that much more unaffordable. So silver's not doing anything. I think gold, though, is going to continue to go up. And I would default back to Weimar Germany and just the inflation that was going on with that. And I bet you could track the gold price go up and then down and then back up again. So I really do think that gold's going to continue to go up. And I think this is directly just because of what has to be done in the monetary system. But the spending, the debt, it's absolutely it's in shambles. There's no way out of this. I do think, I'm not trying to be doom and gloom, but I do think that the James Lavish and the Larry Lepards are right, that we are in the debt spiral. And this is kind of the last couple of years that this game's going to be able to play before there's going to be a hard reset. And I would throw this over to what Trump was doing with Doge. And why I think Doge is going to be terminated in the next couple of months, simply because they have two completely opposite goals. Trump wants to spend money. I think he's trying to pass like a $4 trillion spending package. Elon wants to cut money. Again, those two things, they're not going to coexist. So this is just me. This is my belief. I'm speculating here. But I think Doge was created to go after Trump's enemies in the Democratic Party. I think he knew or had an idea of where they were getting their money for all this funding, all the hit pieces, all these NGO companies. And so he used Elon, whether he knew the end goal or not, I think he used them to go ahead and kind of take care of this so that he or the next candidate that comes into office is not going to have quite as hard as time. And I think once he went after the funding with USAID and also the Social Security thing, I don't think that was payments. I think that was registered voters. If it was payments, I think they would have been blasting that all over. I really do think that was just trying to get voters off the rosters. And so he has those two things taken care of. Now there's not really a purpose for Doge. And I'll throw it up in the nest, but he made a, someone asked him what was going to happen with Elon and Doge. And he's kind of alluding to what I'm getting at here, where he says he thinks Elon is going to leave and go back to his own companies. And so I think that now that Trump's kind of routed and got rid of the funding and made it exposed, he doesn't really have a purpose for Elon. They're going to separate, whether it's going to be mutual or there's going to be kind of a hard breakup. And then you're going to see the money printer come on. That's my thought on this.
Yeah, and make no mistake, it's like Elon wants, in order for him to accomplish his goals, he's a government teat baby himself. He wants the government money to flow to him and his companies. So they want to cut the funding of their enemies, but they want to spend even more money, maybe 5-10 times more money on themselves. So it's just, that's just how government goes.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I didn't like fully grasp it when like the election season, but once like the tariffs like started to fall into place, it makes sense why, you know, Musk was willing to support Trump's you know, like anti, you know, green initiative kind of stuff, because, you know, Musk's companies aren't eligible for like those rebates anymore. But if you throw a 25% tariff on any vehicle, you know, not being produced in the United States, that greatly helps Musk. And you can argue whether that's good or bad. I mean, I think protectionism is always going to end up badly, you know? You know, I think that's kind of the point. And then like, Coleman, like what you were saying before, like what was the purpose of Doge? I think a lot of it is, to kind of get rid of these legacy systems, right? Like USAID is like the one that really stands out to me. You know, it was this big intricate web of things, and a lot of it, you know, that's been revealed, at least the stuff that like what they talk about, right? Like what all these like people are talking about is all the different kind of media arms of USAID. and like how they've helped facilitate like these color revolutions and this and that across the board. I think that part of Doge was to dismantle that system because it's a legacy system, right? Like people, you know, the revolutionaries of the world aren't picking up their local paper, right? You know, they're probably more likely to be on X or on Meta or, you know, one of these other platforms. And, I think that the US government has, what they feel pretty comfortable control or influence, at least over these systems, including X. I mean, if you look at the amount of bots here and like how obvious these bots are, I think it's fair to say that like at least some of them are allowed to be here, for some reason. So, you know, photo of whatever in bio, you know, that's a bot, you know, like that phrase alone, you could eliminate 80% of the bots. You know, I could write something right now to get rid of the bots and, I'm not that smart, you know, so they're letting those bots stay there. So you have to wonder why, right? And I really think it's because they view, social media as the next generation of USAID, right? Like they can dismantle USAID. They gutted, and to be clear, like they moved it to the State Department because some of it they want to leave there in place, right? And they're just going to gut like these legacy, like media arms and stuff like that. And I bet you when the dust settles, a lot of these like NGOs that, were previously like banned in Russia, I think it was like back in like 2012 or something. I bet you some of those will still be around. Because it's been a tool of the CIA and all of them since, the 60s. Like when I read through the JFK files, it was interesting, like seeing them like kind of formulate this idea. Like there was, some charity for like Cuban refugees and they're like, oh, we can house like these militants and train them on a base and we'll just put it underneath this, this like charity for Cuban refugees. So it's like really interesting reading that and like seeing them like come up with this idea that became like USAID and all these like, entanglements between like quote NGOs and, you know, our spy agency. So I bet you a lot of those NGO type things will stick around. I think that they're just trying to shake off like the legacy media aspect of it. Because we have a better tool now. I think that's what a lot of it is. And I think you're right too. I think there is like, I mean, I wrote about this, I don't know what, like a month or two ago about how like, you know, Trump was trying to realign to a more like Monroe Doctrine thing. But I think he got his hand caught in the cookie jar and, you know, has been shocked back onto the neocon path. So regardless of what he campaigned on, I feel like we just have a, you know, we're going back down that, doom spiral of spending and wars and all of that stuff. And the longer, even rhetorically that we stay on it, I think the longer, or the more likely that we end up going down this path, you know, even if, you know, and I've made the case before that, you know, he was negotiating some, like trying to posture and negotiate. But, I think if we stay on it, if we posture and negotiate for too long, like his base will just shift because they'll, you know, a lot of them, unfortunately, and this is both sides, not just Trump, but there's a lot of lemmings that will follow their leader off a cliff. So, you know, if we stay on this rhetoric for too long, then, you know, there'll be people, clamoring for us to stay on it. It'll be more difficult to change course again. So, yeah, I am, resigning myself to the doom spiral a little bit there. Hopefully we change course, but, my ability to, take myself seriously and say, oh, he's just negotiating is severely diminishing, you know? So, there's only, so many times I can make that case and still claim to have any credibility. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'll find out soon enough, but, you know, even these kind of negotiations are harmful to us, you know, even if that's what the goal is. But again, my belief in that is fading fast.
Yeah, I think, so we'll find out tomorrow morning, probably right around when the show is running. Trump's supposed to make a speech at the White House in the Rose Garden talking about the tariffs and how he's going to do it. But remember, Trump came out with dissent and said that they need to get interest rates down and the dollar strength down. And so they are really trying to do this. And I think the tariffs is the way that they think they might be able to do it. But if that doesn't work and it doesn't get things down, they're kind of SOL. I also think that the tariffs on the cars is a way for them to kind of stimulate the economy. And I was listening to the news yesterday, and the new car sales, they're not really picking up because of this. It's just, if people were going to be buying a car in the next couple of weeks, yeah, they went out and purchased ahead of the time so they didn't have to pay the additional price. But people weren't coming off the sidelines like, oh man, I need a new car in a couple of years. I'm going to go ahead and just do it right now. They definitely have an uphill battle, and I don't see a clean way out of this. I think things are probably going to get messy here over the next couple of weeks, which again is good for Bitcoin. I do think you're going to have some good buying opportunities. I do think tomorrow night, come Wednesday, or I guess tomorrow is Wednesday, so Thursday, tomorrow night through Wednesday, I think you'll see a lot of great buying opportunities for Bitcoin. And then I think the market will start to steady itself, and then it'll just kind of be a tit for tat to see who can last longer between countries. And then we'll kind of see how it plays out.
I do think,
Do you have anything else?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I do think, you know, if you look at it, the car market is largely credit driven, same as housing, right? So with interest rates staying high, that's kind of the lever, right? That we're all looking for. So there may be continued pain going, beyond tomorrow with the tariffs, but eventually, something's got to give. And I think that's where, you know, you could see the Fed kind of pivoting, off of their, two rate cuts that they've talked about for this year. Some, in the finance space are already saying they're going to have to do three. And, maybe there's more if there's a lot of pain that come from the tariffs. Because if you don't have cheap credit, you know, Americans are addicted to it. If you don't have it, people aren't buying cars, people aren't buying homes and, or moving. And so, with inflated prices, especially in the housing market, and then sustained higher interest rates compared to what people are used to over the last, you know, decade or so, I think, something's got to give there. So they, on the other hand, what I will say is, if you look at it, before the tariff talk, Trump, before he, you know, started doing the tariff stuff and talking about it, the 10-year bond rate has come down from high fours to low fours. And, you know, that puts pressure on the bond market, which, you know, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of the U.S. needing to refinance lots of debt, I think we're talking somewhere between $8-9 trillion this year. You know, that may bode well for our national debt, and maybe mortgage rates too. But I think, again, like, these are all things that we don't have full sight lines into, that maybe we should enter into the discussion. Not to bore you, but thought I'd throw that stuff in there because I think it does matter as we look to go forward. And we do know if the Fed is in a period of quantitative easing or lowering interest rates, that bodes well for risk assets. So I think Bitcoin, you know, to your point, Coleman, will inevitably see inflows, and that means price appreciation. So we'll wait to see for when that happens.
Time will tell. Time in the markets beats time in the market. I think we'll see some pain in the coming weeks. And just in case anybody was tracking it, the 10-year has gone down 16 basis points since Trump won the election in November. So there, it's still sticky. It needs to come down a lot more if they want to go ahead and refinance $8-9 trillion. Go ahead and enter bit bonds to the discussion. I do want to say a quick thank you to our partners though. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining, solosatoshi.com. Use the code BTCVETS, 5% off your order. Pay with Bitcoin, get an additional 10% off, solosatoshi.com. Punch plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Don't say it out loud. Don't write it. I just saw that Amazon is now recording every single thing you say and is being sent to their servers. This is not an April Fool's joke. This is not trying to put fear in you. Do not say your seed phrase out loud. Stamp it on a metal plate. Go to punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. If you're going to Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th, we do have pre-conference activities taking place on the 1st. Scott Wiley, owner and trainer at Paladin Tower Tactics, will be hosting a seminar at July 2nd in Juneau. So if you'd like to go ahead and join that, go to bitcoinalaska.org and sign up. Also get your tickets for the conference there as well. Last but not least, fountain.fm. Pay your favorite podcasters, your favorite musicians, or get paid for leaving comments. Go to fountain.fm or Fountain app and sign up today. So gentlemen, we are getting close to the top of the hour. Is there anything else you guys would like to hit on today or just kind of go for before we wrap up the show?
Coleman, I was getting blitzed with signal messages, so I'm reloading it here so you're not hearing all these dings while I'm talking. Just to review what you had put in the back channels. I think there were a couple more topics maybe we can touch on.
Did you get stuck in the DOD chat or something? What's going on there?
No, it was the HUD 8 announcement. So we had Montani try and come up. He's back in the audience again. It's kind of just speculative news he was saying. So if you want to come up here and touch on it, Montani, you're more than welcome to. I promise I'll bring you up on the stage this time. I'll cut Yomar off so he doesn't hog the whole panel. Joking. But for everybody in the audience, if you could do me another favor, follow every single person up here. Follow Bobby, Omar, Bitcoin, and Texas Toast, please. I really do appreciate them coming up here every day and helping us with the discussions. And so if you could just go ahead and give them a follow. If you'd like to read, Omar has a really good Substack as well that you can go ahead and subscribe to. With the Bitcoin, the HUD 8 stuff, yeah, I didn't dig into that. I tried digging into the Bitcoin credit. It seems pretty complicated, so it's over my head, so I can't give too much of a deep dive on that, but I did throw a link up in the nest if anybody was interested. Bit.cr is the link. Looks like we got Montani joining us right now to talk about the HUD 8 news. Montani, if you can hear me, good morning, sir. Thank you for coming up here. I cannot hear you, sir, if you were speaking. I've got nothing.
Yeah.
It shows him still on mute from my side. I don't know if it's showing.
I see that too. Yep. Maybe while Montani tries to get his microphone figured out. One thing I did see this morning was a report from, and this is just kind of a general topic, but that Ghana still, despite BRICS, it being a BRICS nation, they don't want to accept local currencies for petroleum exports. So, they're still wanting the dollar for their, black gold. And, I think that's really interesting from the standpoint of like looking at BRICS trying to, change everybody that's in their trading block over to either local currencies or trying to figure out other settlement methods. And maybe something to keep an eye on. It's not huge news, but even Saudi Arabia is still looking for the dollar. And I think this goes back to, that most debt contracts or bonds are across the world are denominated in dollars. And so we're seeing that play out. Like if you're Ghana and you have development goals that were set by the IMF because they've lent you a bunch of money. Well, how did they lend you that money? Like in what currency? They lent it to you in dollars and the repayment has to be back, paid back in dollars. And so if your oil exports are your largest export and you're settling with these other countries, you're probably going to continue to want dollars. And so, I'll stop there because maybe Montani's fixed his mic, but just thought I would throw that in while we had a little bit of lull in the conversation.
Did I fix my mic?
Loud and clear, sir.
Okay. Yeah. So the HUD 8 news item that came across while you were talking to Sue, it looks like it's just like an upgrade mixed with some speculation that they're going to be acquiring a hyperscaler. So really kind of a nothing burger, but we'll see.
I think it's news in itself, though, that, and I'm not sure how much you covered this yesterday, but that Eric Trump, again, is getting involved with this. Same with Don Jr. It really means that that this administration, Trump, again, it's his sons. You can call it the administration or Trump himself. He's going to be fixated on the price of Bitcoin. So I think for the next 4 years, you are not going to get the typical, 60, 70, 80% drawdowns. I think we're going to be in a long-term bull market, regardless of what the price action is doing. I still think that the price is going to go down over the next couple of weeks, but I do expect it to rebound before the end of the month. But I just think it's really big news that the sons of the president are getting involved with this, and that it does seem like he wants to try and make Bitcoin or America the Bitcoin capital of the world. So I would not sleep on that information. And again, this price action, I think, is temporary.
Yeah. And I just want to reiterate that the news article that came across while you were talking to Sue was kind of like a nothing burger. The news of Eric Trump being, on this spinoff and associated with HUD, I think that's huge news. And yeah, don't sleep on that for sure. Didn't want to give that impression.
No, I don't think you gave that impression. I just wanted to make sure everybody understands, and Eric Trump just was involved. He was brought on as a board of advisors for Metaplanet, Japan's quote unquote MicroStrategy, which was the best returning stock in all of 2024 across the globe. So again, I'm not telling you to sell the shares, but if Bitcoin price takes a nice little dip here, you might want to consider it.
Yeah, and let's just hope. It seems like he's surrounding himself with a lot of the big players in Bitcoin, and let's just hope those Ethereum days are behind us and we can, focus on what matters, right?
One can hope, but I feel like Ethereum is just never going to go away. All the shit coins or the crypto coins are not going to go away. Not anytime soon.
Yeah, and that goes back to our earlier conversation about, tokenization of debt. This is just another way. Not to say it shouldn't go on to Bitcoin. I definitely want to circle back to that Bit credit, but I think you're right. Tokenization right now is still on these other rails, but eventually it goes to Bitcoin. So we're going to have to put up with it for a little while longer.
I think you're being modest with that. I think you have another decade at least before people really start seeing the difference.
Yeah, I think the shitcoins will die once Bitcoin is the standard. Because then people won't want to gamble away their Bitcoin,
I don't know if it goes away like that. Again, just people, I think they just feel like they need to get on the next thing that has the highest return. And when they see that price of Bitcoin, they're going to look at the next altcoin, crypto coin, and be like, okay, this is the one that's going to take it. I don't think that dies anytime soon. I think we'll all be very old men. And women before that takes place.
I won't be an old woman, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it's kind of human nature to, like, when you find out about Bitcoin, it's like you're like, oh, what's the next Bitcoin? Because you don't really understand. So I think that's a pipeline that's always going to exist. But maybe it's going to be, shorter lived for people, and they'll figure it out sooner. Maybe that's what we can hope for.
One can hope. Hey, I've got to share this little bit of information with you. Bob, I want you to go ahead and I want to ask you to go ahead and do this, please. But how do liberals play knock-knock jokes? Bob, go ahead and start off a knock-knock joke.
Knock-knock.
Oh, shit. Sorry. I'm supposed to say that. Hey, Bob, knock, knock.
Who's there?
They, them, there.
They, them, there. Who?
Oh, that was a joke. That's how they address themselves. I'm sorry. I think I fell flat on that joke. I apologize for everybody. I'll come back with a better one tomorrow. We can't end the show on that, though, so we have to go ahead and
see. Hey, I got something to end the show on.
Coleman's. I got one. Don't shit coin. It's like Coleman's knock knock jokes.
Yeah. Wade is going to be on Simply Bitcoin today at noon 15, so 12:15. So if everybody on here can hop on there and support him, I think there's going to be a two-ticket giveaway as well. So if you don't have tickets yet, maybe spin the dice on that one. I guess roll the dice, spin the wheel, whatever. Just get out there, 12:15, Simply Bitcoin.
Is that Eastern time?
Yeah, sorry. That's the only time I pay attention to.
It's the only one that matters.
Y'all are definitely not from Texas. Everything's Central time. Everything revolves around Texas. Come on. The faster we can all learn that, the faster Bitcoin adoption will take place.
Yeah, Tejas is great, but I mean, financial center of the United States is New York, for better or worse.
Not for long.
Soon to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you see that Trump Media actually created a secondary listing on the New York Stock Exchange, Texas? And I wonder what the reasoning or ramifications for that is. But you know, I think you know. The three largest, well, I shouldn't say it that way. Three big names, for stock exchanges have recently, announced plans to move to Texas. And so, yeah, I don't know that Central time will change, especially because you have, mainstream media still holding on for dear life, all based out of New York as well. But maybe that shifts over time too. I think, the next couple of decades will definitely be interesting to see as Texas continues to gain traction for financial markets and the population is shifting here too. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, CME is...
Go ahead, Montani.
Sorry, I was going to say CME, Chicago, is that Central as well?
Yep, it sure is. Chicago.
But you have the number one news site, X, that got relocated to Texas as well. So we'll see it happen, Bob. That'll happen before shitcoins go away, I'm telling you.
It's kind of interesting to watch like the state shift play out because it reminds me so much of like the thesis of like the sovereign individual, how people will like move countries based off of favorability. So you can kind of see like that framework play out as some states become shittier and shittier. And other states become better and better. So like you can at the very least conceptualize how like the sovereign individual would play out on a global scale. I mean, obviously we're not there yet. But I feel like you know, it can I don't know. I feel like it's coming closer and closer. I mean like the you know, we see it at the state levels, and I think that like the barrier is like the, you know, the nationalistic urges to, you know, go fight in wars and stuff for your country. But I feel like that's kind of fading because of the arbitrary, things that we do. So, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with, you know, the increasing acceptance of like, you know, remote work and digital work and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's fun to see it at the state level, though, at the least.
You can go to hell. I'll go to Texas.
Vote with your feet.
And I think this becomes a bigger thing in the next election cycle, presidential election cycle. I think, again, there's going to be a lot of big topics that are going to have to be addressed. I think the debt is going to be a huge thing. The interest rates, I still think are going to be insanely high. And, I think you're going to see a correction back to the other side. And so I think if that happens, you're going to see some of these diehard red states. I'll just use Texas as an example. That would go ahead and be like, okay, we're done with this. We have our own economy. We have access to the Gulf of America. Like again, we don't need to have this. We're going to go do our own thing. And I think you'll start to see a little bit of separation take place. If I was a betting man, I bet you that takes place.
What, you mean Texas trying to be a sovereign state again?
Yes. If there is a blue sweep, like there was a red sweep in the next presidential election, I would see, as long as Texas still stays red, I would see Texas separating.
I don't know. Lincoln did a pretty good job of destroying that notion of state sovereignty. So we'll see, you know. You should definitely read The Real Lincoln if you haven't. That's a pretty good book. I forget who wrote that. Thomas DiLorenzo, I think. But that's a good book if anybody's interested in, you know, the Civil War and what it did to the right of secession.
Well, gentlemen, that is all I have for today. Do you all have any other final comments you want to leave us with?
I just want to say thanks again to everybody that tuned in, and thanks for the speakers that came up. We'll do it all over again tomorrow. Make sure we'll try to post the space ahead of time so you guys can add a reminder to your X app. And then, if anybody has topics, feel free to shoot us DMs. And that's where I'll leave it. But go ahead, Coleman.
Tomorrow we have Adrian Morris joining us. So for those of you who don't know, he's in charge of the Irresponsibly Long MSTR channel. We're going to talk everything MicroStrategy tomorrow. I think it'll be a really good show. The last time he came on, it was our highest viewed show that we've ever done. So I expect tomorrow's show to be really good. Come in with your questions about that. He'll be more than happy to answer any of those. Tune in tomorrow morning with Adrian and us. And again, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Thank you, ladies, for listening. And thank you, everybody, who had us on in the background just to drown out those voices or your in-laws in the background. I really do appreciate it. That's all I have. Have a fantastic day. Just do not shitcoin. I'm going to steal this from Bob. It's like using cough syrup to address your hemorrhoid problem.